It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
Yes, it is the best 60 minutes of your day, the Gary Ellison Homer Hour. Gary Ellison is on assignment. He will be replaced by Don August and Mike DeCourcy after we deal with the thing that's always done whenever the Brewers have an evening home game. You can listen and then watch on YouTube to find out if the dome is open or closed. Don't have to call anybody, don't have to do anything, just Homer, 5 o'clock, go to YouTube. Is the dome open or closed? If you are watching on YouTube, you now know if the dome is open or closed. Joining me now is Don August. He pitched for the Brewers, but over time, as I've studied his Wikipedia, it seems to me that he might like baseball as much as anybody who ever played. Joining us now is the author of a book, I can't remember the title. Someone told me I was in it because he made fun of me for saying that he signed with a major league team during the strike year. And he doesn't remember it. He called and said, you were wrong. You said I signed. I don't know what it was. And I said, well, I'll do it later. I can't do it till whatever the time. So I probably apologized when he was on the show, but I'm old enough. I don't even remember that I did it, but I'm sure I did. Don August joins the program. Good evening.
Hello. Hello, Homer.
What's the name of the book? It was about you playing baseball in every country in the world, right?
Something like that. But the thing is that you said, at the time you said I signed as a replacement player in that the spring training of 95 and the lockout and the strike and all that. Mm-hmm. I didn't sign as a replacement player. So that was all it was.
Because that was... That was, I'm sure it would have been, for me, offensive because you weren't going to cross the line, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want a lot of people to be mad at me to do that.
Did you sign with somebody, or did I just make it all up?
Well, you got part of it right. I signed with the Pittsburgh Pirates, but not as a replacement player. I went to minor league spring training waiting for the real major league spring training to start, and I was going to get a major league invite when that occurred. But I didn't cross over and play in those replacement games. I didn't want that to be known.
I should have known better than that. I didn't know you that well, but I don't know that there was anybody on that team. It's not hard to explain. Players just weren't going to do it. Their belief in the union was that strong. And I don't know who became a replacement player, but if they did, it wasn't about their standard. They just weren't very smart.
Yeah, well, a lot of people, they have like long memories, and a lot of guys who did cross over and play in those replacement games, when they did eventually get called to the major leagues, some of the teams wouldn't accept them.
Yeah.
Some guys actually would fly into that town and they'd say, we're not playing with this guy, and they'd actually fly him right back the same day and have to get another guy. So, yeah, it was a very situation back in the day. Yeah.
You should write another book about that. I'm not sure people can relate
probably
to it.
I probably could, but yeah.
All right, now am I correct? Like, you played baseball, you were in the majors a few years, and then you played everywhere else in the world, and then you decided to coach, and I think you still play. Don't you play at whatever level a former major league player, other than you, probably never played? You just play against regular people, right?
Yeah, that's what I do now. I play in the 55 and older league, and I enjoy doing it. It's competitive, and we all have fun. We're all equally slow in our age now.
But doesn't everybody say, I just got a hit off a major league pitcher? That's what I would say. Or not.
Hey, we can hold beer after the game and enjoy it too.
You don't care is the whole key. You'd rather play and have a few people say that, right? I'm assuming.
I don't mind. I like the competition. I like being with the guys, and it makes for a good time.
And you coach. You were coaching a high school team, right? Or maybe you have for many years.
I have now. I've been coaching at Menomee Falls High School's JV team for the last 25 years. And I enjoy that part of...
All right, now my one question before we get to Miz. Everybody's going, Homer, when are you going to talk? By the way, the Miz is pitching tonight. Every day, I think the first question every sports fan in Wisconsin every day should say, is the Miz pitching tonight?
Well, he's a freak.
He is. That's John Smoltz. Are kids the same? You've been doing it 25 years.
Yeah, kids are the same. They're all the same kind of knuckleheads, you know? They're getting ready to get their driver's license at that age. They're, you know, about, they're 16 years old where I'm working with them at mostly. And, you know, they do the same things as they've done 25 years ago.
So, because people say kids have changed, they aren't as competitive. I don't know what they say is different. But you're living it. You competed, and now you've been observing people ages competing for 50 years, or I don't know how many years. But would you, when they say that, is it tougher to coach? Is it the same to coach, or what? What's the reality? Because you're living it, not saying it.
You're just teaching the game to the guys. You know, nothing's changed. What's changed? We all get older. The kids stay 16 every year. I just get older every year.
No, I think the parents have changed. Parents are way too involved. They go to way too many games. But maybe that's not a problem. That would be my observation, but I don't even know if that's accurate. You can tell me that's wrong. Are they any more of a problem than they were or used to be or not?
Maybe a little bit more. Maybe a tiny bit more. But the problem usually comes in communication. You just communicate with the kids. You communicate with the parents. You just keep up. You always tell the truth, and you say exactly what it is. And I avoid a lot of problems that way.
Thus, you are telling me that if there's a problem that's big, it's probably more on the coach than it is just the parents. Because you've clearly, just by your tone, in almost all cases, you figured it out, right?
Well, you got to be open and honest. I mean, that'd be on me.
The kid's not any good. You got to tell him he's not any good, and tell the parents he's not any good, right?
Well, you kind of don't say they're not good, but you just kind of tell them where they kind of lack their skills, and you got to have a nice way of saying it.
Okay, but you're still saying it.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now let's get to the Miz. I think I can't talk enough about him. I think, as John Smoltz says, he's a freak. But I'm curious to hear from you and everybody. I talk about him. I want to talk about him every day. You watch the Miz. Tell me what you see.
Well, I see a guy growing right before our eyes. Last year, when he first came up, we heard a lot about him coming. We heard about his big, hard fastball. And we also heard about, you know, his main problem at that time was his control. But when you throw 102 miles an hour and you got that part of the game at a very good place at the major league level, there's a few other things you still got to learn and get better at. So we took along his great fastball last year and got him into the big leagues, and he did a lot of good things. But then he had his main problem was the control issues, throwing strikes. And his pitch counts got real high, and it was hard for him to go get deep in the games and stuff like that. But when he wasn't throwing strikes, then you're walking batters, and he wasn't doing as well. He had that little streak last year, if you remember.
Yes.
He kind of struggled a little bit. But then he kind of found himself at the end, and then he really pulled himself back together when he pitched in the playoffs. And that's when he got his control got back there. Well, a year later now into this season, he's really matured in a lot of ways. I think his thinking of the game, I think that he knows what he can do more now because his control has gotten a lot better. I mean, his pitch counts are staying lower, and he's getting deeper into games now. And he's really working in his other pitches, you know, his breaking ball pitch, which, you know, when you're throwing 102, then you throw a hard slider and stuff like that. I mean, hitters are having a hard time with that. And he's going to work on that third pitch now, and you know, more of an off-speed pitch to keep these guys off balance. And he's getting better in that third pitch, but what the main things is break the ball, more strikes, getting ahead of counts, putting guys away a lot earlier, and going deep into games.
When you watch him pitch, what do you look for first? Like, he's pitching tonight. Turn on the TV, or maybe you're at the game. I can't look at him the way you look at him. Because you pitched. What do you watch first?
Well, I just look first. Is he going to throw strikes? Get ahead of hitters. Because I don't care if you go 102, 92, or 82. Pitchers have the advantage when they're ahead of the count. So I look for him to get ahead of the counts. And if I can see now a hard thrower, they can get away with a lot of pitches that a guy that doesn't really throw hard. You know, if I threw the ball right down the middle of the plate, it would get hit hard a lot of times. Hard throwers, they can throw it over the middle of the plate and they can get away with it more often. Not always, but more often.
So I would think you'd go, like, I mean, based on what you just said, Don, talking with Don August, buy his book, just look up it is. I pitched everywhere in the world. What was the title of it?
Pitching to the corners.
Pitching to the corners. That was to the corners of the world and the corners of home plate, too, right?
There you go. Exactly.
All right. Now, so just went on to what you said. Am I the manager? And he walks somebody. I go like, Miz, how do you walk somebody? You can throw it right. Don August just said you can get away some of the time with throwing it right down the middle of the plate, your fastball. So what's the problem?
That kind of a problem for him to get away with it more often, but you don't get away with it all the time.
All right.
Now, I kind of think of a pitcher back in my day who threw harder, and his name was Roger Clemens.
Sure.
And what him good is he did throw harder, but he hit spots. Now, if the Miz can start hitting spots better and control the ball.
All right, hold on. Let's go. Stop. I hate to interrupt, but not really. What spots? Because there, who knows how many spots? What, when you say hit spots, what are you saying? Because I'm going to watch to see if he's hitting those spots, whatever they are. Which spots?
All right, inside and outside. You know, if he's going to hit a corner, instead of throwing the ball right down the middle, he's keeping the ball more down and hitting the corner and a corner. Or nowadays, they pitch more above the zone. They pitch above, slightly above the hands. And that's where guys chase those high pitches and can't catch up to it. If he can hit those spots, instead of just whipping it right over the middle of the plate, he's going to be even more
All right, we got a right-hander at the plate. Don August is coaching the Miz. We got four spots. Which spot do you want him to hit first? You got inside, high or low, and we got outside, high or low. What's number one?
Well, it depends on what batter. Every batter is going to be different. You're left-handed, right-handed.
No, yeah, right-handed. Right-handed hitter.
Well, a lot of hitters, some right-handed hitters, you can go on their hands. Some right-handers, you can go on the low outside part of the plate.
I'm the Miz. Come on, Coach August. I don't got to worry about who's at the plate. I'm throwing 103.
Don't. You do got to worry. There's guys that have weaknesses. You want to pitch to their weaknesses.
Even at 103, you have to know their weaknesses? All right.
Yes.
All right. Well, I always think I would have said low, but I think more and more you see people, hitters, that take bad swings at high fastballs. So if I'm watching his corner, the one corner I, not Coach August, but Coach Homer, would say, look it, down is always good. The inside corner down first, the inside corner high second, outside, I'm always going to go low above high, but maybe I'm wrong with fastballs. So then I got inside low, inside high, outside low, outside high. That's my order 1 through 4. Now, so the people shouldn't even have been listening to that. They should have said, just shut up and let August tell you what his four. You know nothing about the hitter.
First of all, you'll know something about the hitter unless he's a brand new player because you got scouting reports.
All right, but in this case, we don't because I want you to make the opinion based on just assuming an average hitter.
Just some guy who I've never seen before.
Yes, correct.
Okay, I'm going to throw a strike. I'm going to fill a guy out then. I will throw either a low outside pitch fastball or on his hands. I want to see what kind of swing.
You're going to go low both ways first. Is that
low? No, low away or up and in.
Oh, up and in, too. All right. Yeah. Okay, hands. And then three, where's the last place you want it to go?
Well, I don't want to go right down the middle.
I know, but we got the first one, we got low and outside. Second one, we got high and inside. We still got low and inside and high and outside for your third choices.
All right, well, then my next choice, maybe I get it over a breaking ball, throw it over plate to get a strike. And you don't really expect a lot of hitters to be swinging at first pitch breaking balls unless they're expecting it. But you get it over to get ahead of the count.
Wow, you would throw more first pitch breaking balls probably. Oh, all right.
You could. That's the way you can jump it, because they shouldn't swing, and you want to get that 0-1 count. You want to jump ahead of that hitter. So I would get a little breaking ball and throw it over. And if he wants to swing at it and get a quick out for me, I'll take that. Right.
But if he hits it well, Coach Homer goes, what are you throwing the guy a curveball? He couldn't hit your fastball in a month. And now he just hit a double because you decided to be smart and throw him a curveball. What do you say to that?
I expect you to yell at me if his second time comes up and I throw another one over the plate and he hits another double.
Oh.
Yeah, then you can yell at me.
All right, okay. So you get, as a pitcher, you get a you get an understandable mistake. You just can't repeat it. All right. Oh.
He's got to figure him out. You got to feel what kind of a batter this guy is. Does he swing at the first pitches or does he take them?
How do you remember all that stuff? I'm the Miz. I don't have to remember anything. Hey, dude, fastball's coming. You can't hit it.
Well, that's helpful when you throw 102.
Yeah, I know. Well, you've already told me there's... And 755, formerly known as Jerry Augustine, says the same thing. You guys look at how he pitches, whatever that means to each of you.
Does he have control with his other pitches?
Right.
You know, can he get his curveball over the plate?
That's my next question. Which of his pitches do you think, I'd ask you as well, were you able to get each of your pitches over the plate the same percentage of times or not?
No, not always.
Really? Okay.
But what I'm going to look for in the Miz is he getting his breaking ball over now?
Yeah.
He's getting both his fastball and breaking ball
over. How could you hit him?
That's right. That makes it a lot harder. Back in the day when I did throw a good game here and there, the reporters asked me, hey.
Hold on.
Whoa.
You can't do that on this show. Okay?
What's that?
You pitched in the major leagues. You're an elite baseball player, and I commit you can't say negative things about your performance as a player.
Right.
Okay, you were not only good, you're off the charts if you ever played, and you had some good games. So you can throw that stuff at other announcers, but I'm not going to let you do it. You're special,
okay, good.
And people need to think of you that way. All right, back to...
you're right.
Okay,
So I'll put it this way.
Yeah.
When I wasn't just good, but when I was real good,
yeah,
the reporters asked me, what's going on here? I go, everything was working, which meant my control, my... First pitch, my fastball was controlled. My breaking ball pitch was controlled. And my third pitch. I'd say everything was working today. Some days you can still pitch a good game, but you are struggling with one of those other pitches. So you can only use two of your three. And when you have only one working, well, then you got to worry what's going to happen. But when you can get those things all working, and that's what we're going to look at the Miz tonight, we're going to watch and see, is he getting ahead of the hitters quickly? And is he using two of his pitches working really well, and maybe that third pitch. If he can get all three of those pitches working, well, then we'll see a great game out of the Miz.
Talking with Don August, and I'm guessing that even when you had everything going, you still were working first on the person batting, not that everything was working. I still got to treat that batter the same way, whether I got my stuff or not, correct?
Well, you got to use your stuff and then go to plan B, plan C sometimes. But you got it. But after you pitch against the batters, the Miz has now pitched some of these guys a number of times now.
Yeah.
He's got in his brain, he remembers what kind of guys have done, if they're first pitch swingers or not. If they're not a first pitch swinger, you can get that easy pitch over the plate and then go from there getting ahead. So, yeah, he'll know. He knows what he's going to do. He's got it. You know, the pitching coach, all them guys already talked to him about tendencies, and especially in this day and age, with all those those percentages on everything,
other people that pitch, they don't like them, or I don't know if you like them. I like them, but I have to determine which ones I'm going to use, right? I mean, they're just stats, but stats still, there are stats they give you, and you wouldn't say it because you're nice, and you'd think, that doesn't mean crap.
And then other stats. Nowadays,
what?
Analytics, I mean, the analytics, they got these things all on paper, and when they have their meetings, they go over them, and it's they go by the book. They go by the book nowadays, which is a lot different than when I played back in the good old days. You know, you had your gut feeling, and
was your book. Gut feelings were not stupid. Hey, I got a gut feeling today that I can throw it right down the middle. I want to take a quick break, because then I want to ask you about Jeff Suppan, who I saw him pitch late in his career with the Brewers. I think he's the greatest pitcher I ever saw. And you know why?
Why?
He had nothing. And every batter that went up there acted like the guy's got nothing. And everyone was upset when they made an out. And I thought he knew from pitching, I don't care. I got nothing, but I'm not giving you your best pitch, what you want. Yeah. I'm going to see if you're stupid enough to swing at stuff you shouldn't. And if you are, you're out, which is why I probably did good in the postseason. If not, I'll walk you. I ain't giving you what you want. I don't care if I have to walk you. And I'll walk the next guy if I have to, because I think over time I can get people to take stupid swings because they'll swing at whatever the reason is, and I can get people out even though everyone smacks his bat when he makes an out going, you got nothing. You got no fastball. You got no curveball. And I just popped up. All right, is any of that true? Don August will tell
us. Yes, you actually made some sense there.
That just ruined it because no one believes you. They think you're just being nice to me. We'll find out why he says that next. With Don August, the author of the book, Pitching to the Corners. We'll get back to my comment on Jeff Supon. Fisco Auto Body, it's a family business owned since 1931. It's not what they do, it's who they are. They're still running the business. It's still the Fiscos fixing your car. Imagine how many years they've been doing this. That's one of the reasons they're so good. Fisco Body on Forest Home in Franklin. Expert workmanship guaranteed for the life of your vehicle. Any damage, Fisco has you covered. Fisco Auto Body on Forest Home in Franklin. You go there, you'll thank them. And then eventually you'll say, I got to thank Homer. It's a small part, but I like it as well. Fisco, to remember the name. All right, Don August, he kind of responded to what I said. And again, I saw Jeff Supon very late in his career. I thought it was the greatest pitching performance I've ever seen because it was clear to me every hitter thought he had nothing. Everyone who made an out did something, some form of disgust, which I thought was they're going like, he's got nothing. Even Homer knows he's got nothing. And I just popped up. All right. All made up. Any truth? Don August, take it away.
All right, a little bit to that. Yes. He really didn't have a lot of good stuff towards the end of his career. And what he did was he would pitch backwards, or he would throw...
Excuse me. Junior high level here, sir. He pitched backwards. That obviously doesn't mean backwards to the plate, but explain backwards.
No. I'll explain that. So pitching backwards means when it's a fastball situation, you throw a curveball. When it's an off-speed curveball situation, then you throw your fastball.
I don't care, buddy. You got nothing. Whatever you throw up there, I can hit it a mile.
Well, they think you're going to throw a fastball and you throw the curveball, then they don't hit it as well.
All right.
And if they're going to, okay, here's a breaker ball, and you throw the fastball when they don't expect it.
All right.
That's called pitch backwards.
I got it. So why wouldn't you always pick? What's the negative of pitching backwards? Because in theory, it seems really smart.
Well, when you're doing good, and like you say, you saw him as the greatest pitcher that one day or end of his career. Yeah. Well, another thing that he could do.
Okay.
Example: what I did back in the days. I remember when I pitched against Jose Canseco. He's a guy that likes to hunt the fastballs. He's waiting for your fastball, and especially if there's runners in scoring position, they get real hungry. They want those RBI and stuff. So you throw them a bunch of sliders off the corners, and not the pitches they want, but then you throw them their fastball. But then you put it a little bit up and a little bit in, and they'll jam themselves and they'll swing at the pitch, even though they know they shouldn't. But it's a fastball, and they're so hungry, they'll just jump at it anyway.
Would you ever consider walking him and accepting the walk if he wouldn't swing at the pitches that you wanted him to swing? Did you ever do that?
I mean, sometimes you'd walk him if there's an open base, that kind of thing. Depends what the situation is. But you're out to get those guys out. That's what you are. You're a major league pitcher. You got to get guys out, or they'll just get someone else eventually.
All right, last question for Don August. Unless you have something to add, because you're the guest, you can finish any way you want. When did you ever see a pitcher and say, watching him, he's a Hall of Famer? And then, because the follow-up's going to be, what would Miz have to do for me to call you and say, that kid might get in the Hall of Fame? So, Hall of Fame pitchers that you saw and you knew they were going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Huh. Well,
none is okay, too.
Just jump off the side just a little bit. I can see the Miz with his stuff right now. I can see him if he can continue this and even getting better, he could be in the Hall of Fame. Another pitcher today is Paul Skeens. Yeah. I can see him possibly being in the Hall of Fame someday, but you got to do it over and over and over, and you can't.
You got to stay healthy. I want you to answer this because I interrupted myself, but John Smoltz said all he could think about with Miz is please don't get hurt, but all the young pitchers get hurt. And he didn't, I mean, it's almost as if you assume every pitcher's going to get hurt. And he said, I hope he's the exception because he's a freak.
Right.
But do you just assume every pitcher's going to get hurt?
I think they overthrow a lot today because they do throw hard, so they throw real hard all the time. Back in my day, you didn't throw 100% hard all the time. You kind of kept about 90-something, and you take a little off your fastball, you put a little bit on. But they just go all out and just throw super hard pitch after pitch, and I think that's a little bit more stressful on the arm, which then tends to make people worry that they can get hurt.
All right, and now my last question for the fourth time. I just wish I could be there when Don August says to a kid, you know, you should know, you could be a big league player. Or if you'd say, you could be a division. I don't know, what's the highest you've ever gone in all your years as a coach telling a player, a kid, how good you thought they could be?
I think I tell them a lot, I guess most of the time. I don't say, hey, you could be a major leaguer, because that just takes a lot of luck and a lot of things to fall right and so on. But I can always say, hey, I can see you getting to that next level, which means maybe from the JV team to the varsity team. Maybe, hey, I think you can maybe pitch beyond high school. I can see that happening if, you know, you continue working hard and doing all those other good things that you tell the kids to do. I think that's about as far. I can't tell them major league. That's too much of a lottery win.
You haven't, if you saw somebody, right? You just can't, you can't see them at that age?
At the high school age, not yet. If I'm looking at a kid from the college level, I can see.
Did anybody say to you in high school, you could be a big leaguer?
I don't really recall hearing that.
Okay.
I just remember, hey, you can probably pitch in college. And that was just the next step. That's the approach I always took.
All right.
I always look, what's the next level? What's next year? I'm going from the freshman team to the JV team, JV to varsity, and then I wanted to be in college. I wanted to pitch in college, and then I worried about getting drafted and making up every level from there. I just took it one level at a time, and I think that's the approach you got to take. I mean, you don't want to put too much on you and too much stress or overdoing it. You know? That's what I think.
All right, sell some books. Pitching to the Corners. This is only a one-word answer because I'll ask you to elaborate. This is my fifth last question. The craziest place in the world where you ever pitched. All I need is a...
Craziest place I've ever pitched, I'd say probably Taiwan.
Taiwan, and we will update Taiwan the next time Don August comes on, unless he says, you have to have like eight last questions. Thanks for coming on. You can come on any day to talk about the Miz.
Okay, and then, hey, anybody can read my book and see you're in it, and they can read all about it.
Yes. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, read where Homer was wrong. Can't believe he said that. That's okay.
Yeah.
It's true. Thanks, Don.
No problem. Talk to you again soon.
Don August, The Miz, the first half hour. Next, we're going to see if we can get Mike DeCourcy, my basketball expert who is interested in soccer. And he is Mike DeCourcy, my college basketball expert. Should be everybody. If you got a question on college basketball, you go to @TSNMike, Sporting News, College Hoops columns. He's worked for him for 100 years. Big Ten Network, he's been on everywhere. There's one difference. The World Cup's starting, and he's my soccer expert. You know why? Because I've never had a soccer expert. Mike DeCourcy cares about soccer. Here's what I want to tell him about soccer. Any sport in which Uruguay, Senegal, Colombia, Croatia, Netherlands, Belgium, Portugal, and Morocco are ranked higher than the U.S., we don't give a damn about that sport. Joining us now is Mike DeCourcy. How do you respond to that, sir? You've already put up three outstanding tweets in the last 5 minutes about soccer. Where'd you get the picture of the guys? You're in the hallways watching them come into the locker room?
That was the photograph that accompanied my article. I did not take that.
So. All right. Back to my thought. Answer my question, sir.
Well, I think that's what makes it great. I think it shows that that the sport is, you could be a nation as large as the United States in population and not be the best. But it takes work. The Netherlands is more compact, Uruguay more compact, and they're able to field tremendous teams. Croatia was in the 2018 championship game against France, and I think Croatia, 5 million people.
But isn't
maybe,
it hard for
like
you
that?
To believe as you study sports that we can be no better than this?
Well, it just shows how devoted the rest of the world is to it.
Mm.
And the various advantages that they have that because of their professional system. I remember, this is the difference between the United States and the rest of the world. The United States has basically been at it since 1990 in a serious capacity, a semi-serious maybe then. Now, I think you can say a serious capacity for the last, basically since the prep for the 94 World Cup. And everybody else has had a 100-year head start on that.
Yeah, but
and
we're
so
the U.S.
It's hard to make. Yeah, but it takes a while to make up the 100 years. Remember, when we got the World Cup here in 1994, there was no major professional league here in the United States. The North American Soccer League, which never really became quite the possibility that it could have been because people just didn't connect with soccer here because it wasn't in their community. Nobody played it. So nobody watched
it. And now everybody plays it. We're still no good.
Well, but the difference is that they understand how to turn young people into pros in the countries in a way we don't hear. Here, what happens is if you show promise, somebody recruits you into their pay system, their club pay club, where you you pay a bunch of money to somebody to train you and to play high-level competitions, and then you travel all over the country to play high-level competitions, and it costs your family a ton of money, and maybe you get a college scholarship out of it, and maybe you become a good player that the MLS recognizes. But when by the time an MLS academy gets to you, you're 5-6 years behind the person who grew up in Liverpool and went to the Liverpool academy.
So what do we have to do then? You're now my soccer guy.
The MLS academies have to continue to grow, and they have to continue to extend down to younger ages. It's a challenge. It really is. It's a very difficult challenge that the U.S. has to. And honestly,
Mike DeCourcy, my soccer expert. You know how I solve it for you? I don't talk to anybody about soccer unless they got an accent.
Okay.
I want to go. I follow tennis, and the U.S. has watched Spain. It was horrible. Italy's horrible. And now they're dominating the U.S. because they set up these youth systems and programs.
Yeah.
And clearly the one we have had isn't good enough. So find somebody who's run one in some other country.
Well, I was just going to say, like, if I had a kid who was showing, like, serious promise, I would take him to somewhere in Europe, to Liverpool or to Chelsea, and say, hey, take a look at my kid. Is he good enough for your academy or not? And I mean, I'm talking about like when he's 9 years old, 10 years old, because that's when you really get the head start.
Balotelli did it in tennis and did it for a while, and they've tried it since. It hasn't worked. Yes, but that's, Mr. DeCourcy, we've decided instead of doing that, why don't you just start one in the U.S. and hire some of our coaches? Who are the people, right? They're people running it, or, you can analyze it I'm sure 9 or 10. Rafael Nadal got his first shoe contract at 9 in Spain.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of the idea.
Okay.
Is that the eventually the MLS academies have to extend to even younger ages than they typically do now. I think most of the young people that go to those academies now, probably 13 at the earliest. That's the majority. Leander Schalekens, who writes,
he's got an accent.
For Fox. He does. He's from, actually he doesn't. He's from the Netherlands, but he has no accent. He wrote this great book called The Long Game.
Right.
And it's about the rise of the U.S. men's national team for the last 40 years or so. And he pointed out that in Madrid and Dallas are basically the same size city, and that Madrid has 12 significant professional soccer teams and Dallas has one. And so if you grew up in Madrid, you're 12 times more likely to end up in a youth academy just within your city than you are if you grew up in Dallas. So it makes a huge difference.
All right, let's get to they now let everybody in the World Cup. They're like 100 teams, and so they get 16 groups. And
just like the NCAA.
Yes,
now,
yes, right, if there's an interest. Yeah, excellent point. All right, how do I view – tell me whatever I need to know about the team, the star players, or like they should make the final 16. That would be what, an embarrassment if they don't?
I think it would be very disappointing if they failed. But the problem is that when their group was drawn, Mm-hmm. Paraguay, not too bad, given the other possibilities. Australia, pretty good, given the other possibilities. But then the last of them was a team to be named who qualified out of the Europe situation. And they wound up with probably the best team, and not the best team in Europe, but the best team that didn't qualify automatically in Turkey. It's a really good team. And so
Turkey?
If you finish second.
Turkey is good?
Oh, yeah, they're very good, yes. If the U.S. finishes second in this group, even if they win their round of 32 game, the likely opponent in the round of 16 would be Argentina, the reigning champion.
I know Argentina.
Maybe even better now than they were 4 years ago. Well, we'll see. But
the U.S. has to win their group, though, right? You have to win your group. There's 16 groups, right?
You don't have to win to get farther because of the expansion to 48. As a matter of fact, you don't even have to finish second. You can finish third and still make it. But the optimal is to win the group, and that starts tonight. If you win against Paraguay, you're in great shape. If you don't, it becomes a real labor at that point.
So wait a minute. So we have 64. How many teams do they have now?
There are 48.
48 teams. And after your group of four, am I right?
Yes.
12 groups of four.
Yes.
And after the 48, they break it down to how many?
32. Second round will be, so they'll eliminate 16 out of 48.
They're playing all these games in the group only to eliminate 16 teams?
Well, that's the problem.
Okay.
With expanding all right. To 16.
Okay.
With expanding to 48. You're right. No, I mean, like most of us who follow this, we're not in favor of that. 32 is a perfect number. There are teams, and there are a lot of romantic.
So then from 32, would you still have groups, and then after the groups, you go down to 16?
No, 32, you have a round of 16 game. You have a round of 32 game. It's a single elimination, and if you don't win that, you're out. And it's more perilous than people realize. I mean, the United States, I think it was under 20 last autumn, they had a terrific performance in group. They did some great things in their group play. I think they won all three of their games and played great. And then they got Morocco just because Morocco didn't play great in their group. But Morocco was really good, and they beat them in a tough game. And so that can happen. It's certainly possible if you've played a team that kind of barked through their group, even if they're good, and you wound up playing them around a 32. Yeah, you could get beaten in a round of 32, and even if you win your group. It's a harder deal now than it was in any time previously. Easier to get to 32, but much harder to get to 16 now.
Wow. The U.S. brought in the hotshot coach. I don't know if he has an accent, right? This guy's a big shot, right?
Oh, yes. Mauricio Pochettino. He's from Argentina. Coached at Tottenham.
Was it a good decision?
League final. Well, it was a necessary decision. Okay. If you followed the 22 World Cup.
I didn't.
At the end of it. Well, there you go.
I didn't have my guy. Now I got my guy.
There you go. There was a young man named Gio Reyna, one of the more talented young players on the U.S. team. I think he was 20 or so at the last World Cup or somewhere around there, 20, 21. And he was told he wasn't going to start. And he, according to all involved, behaved in a way that was less than professional. And they thought about sending him home. And the coach at the time revealed this in what he thought was a private speech and turned out to get publicized. And then there was a big kerfuffle over that. And in the end, it probably should have cost him his job because when the players stepped forward and saved his job, they treated him like, we own you now. You owe us. And they stopped committing. They started behaving in ways
that were totally foreign.
So they brought in this guy to fix what had gone wrong, and he has worked very hard to say, this is what you're going to do, this is how you're going to play, this is the commitment you're going to show.
And he can say that because he's from Argentina. He knows his stuff, right?
The one thing that's been problematic is that he really, until this last month, hasn't really committed to how he wants to play. And so the it's kind of like hiring a football coach in the middle of the summer and then him not deciding between a 3-4 and a 4-3 defense until
that doesn't make any sense. Like this guy's
I'll give you an example. Last fall he played three central defenders, that what they call a three or five man back line.
All right.
And the U.S. had an unbelievable game against Uruguay, won 5-1, probably the best national team game that's been played in the last 10 years. And then he came back in the spring, in March, and they played Portugal and Brazil.
And he
Belgium,
played another defense. Don't tell me.
And he played a different defense. Yes, he did. And they got blitzed. Now, he seems to be back to the original commitment to play with a three in the back. But you do worry. How comfortable will they be when they've been bouncing back and forth?
Well, we're going to ask you because you're my guy now, whether you want to be my guy or not. All right. In one sentence, given that you follow this, you're a basketball guy. The rest of the world cares about this. And you said, if they care, I got to learn. You've learned. What's the one thing you want to say to people who haven't learned yet?
Yeah, I think that the one thing I'll say is, remember when you were 7 years old and you were first finding out about baseball?
Mickey Mantle, Willie Mays.
Right, exactly. I mean, like when I was 7 years old and I was learning about baseball, like I couldn't learn enough. And so when I was 30 and I gave the World Cup a try, it was kind of a little bit like being seven again and having that whole universe like that you didn't know. I mean, when I first started watching that World Cup, I did not know any of the rules other than if the ball goes in the net, you win. I mean, you score. Okay. That's all I knew. I mean, I didn't know any of the rules, and I just gradually watched and observed and learned. And by the end of the World Cup, I'm not going to say that I was ready to coach the U.S. men's national team, but I understood the sport, and I got a good feel for who was good and which players were good.
And you liked it enough to keep doing it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at that point, there wasn't much of a choice because, like, okay, so it was something I put away for 4 years because you couldn't really watch it except in the World Cup. But then MLS started in 94 and 96, excuse me, after the 94 World Cup. And then the Premier League started to be on US TV. So now, like, if you fall in love with it, you don't have to wait 4 years. You can just start up in August when all that stuff.
All right, who's the best player on the U.S. team? Is there anybody I should?
Yeah, his name is Christian Pulisic. He's from Hershey, Pennsylvania. He plays his club soccer at Inter Milan. Excuse me, my apologies, AC Milan.
Whatever, not here.
Inter on the brink is when I visit.
Yeah. If they're good, they go play in Europe, right?
Yes. Yeah. If you're going to make real money, you got to go play in Europe. The one flaw in Major League Soccer is they won't pay you unless you are an American who's coming back from Europe. It's the weirdest thing. I asked the commissioner about that 6 or 7 years ago. It's like, why don't you like pay to keep some of these guys? Like at least give them an offer that they have to refuse, and they still have not. They're waiting for guys to come back.
Or they need to have more money, right? At some point, the more money will convince them to come back or not.
Well, but they pay. See, they will pay.
Oh, I paid what's his name?
Messi, or they'll pay. There's a young man. There's a man named Robert Lewandowski from Poland who played this past year at Barcelona, and he's great. And he's older, but he's a big name, and they're going to pay him a bunch of money to come play in Chicago if he takes the offer. But they won't do that with an American player, unless it's a pretty rare circumstance. They did it 10 years ago with Clint Dempsey and Michael Bradley and Josie Altidore, and it works for the teams that did that. They all won championships, but it's still rare.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time. You probably never thought in any time in your life it would get so bad that Homer would pick me as my soccer guy. But
no, I'm honored. I'm honored, Homer. I am, and thrilled.
All right.
Now you got to do me a favor.
Yes.
And watch tonight when they play Paraguay and give it a shot.
Oh yeah, I will once the Miz is done pitching. The Miz is pitching for the Brewers, and come on. But otherwise, yes, I will easily tape it or whatever. My wife will probably be watching it. But I appreciate the time. I know the game's getting ready started, and again, go to a site. I don't know what you're still doing. You're retired, but not retired, and. Mike DeCourcy.
No, I'm not retired until the World Cup is over.
That's
the way it
works. Far as college basketball, I will never let you retire. Because I don't care if you retire.
All right.
I'll still call to bother you. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks,
Mike
Homer.
DeCourcy. Go to the Sporting News. Go to his site on Twitter. And yes, I do, for the first time ever, have a soccer guy next. If your air conditioner never seems to turn off, worn-out windows could be the culprit. And now, it doesn't have to be like that. You can take care of it. Going to get an even bigger deal when it gets hotter. Upgrade yours now during Window Nation's Buy 4, Get 4 free sale. Imagine new energy-efficient windows and getting half of them free. Plus, you could even get no money down, no monthly payments or interest for 2 years. And as a proud partner of the Brewers, you could book a consultation and ask how you could score a pair of Brewers tickets. Sale ends soon, so visit WindowNation.com. Window Nation, also proud partner of Wounded Warrior Project. And do want to also mention Milwaukee Weight Loss because it works. Milwaukee Weight Loss. Weigh 229, about the 1st of January. Now I'm at 206, something like that, and I can be whatever I want because the system works. I eat less, and I'm happy eating less. For a limited time, get $200 off the Milwaukee Weight Loss Summer Special. Book your free consultation now at MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. Results may vary, but it's this simple. I eat less, and I'm happy eating less. I never thought that was possible. It is, and there's no but. Do this, but you have to do this. You can lose the weight, but you have to do this. No, there's nothing. The program is different. No drugs, surgery, or injections, just a proven metabolic reset. You'll eat less, and you can do it. I look forward to telling you in 3 more months. I'll be at the same weight or a little lower if I decide to. It's not easy, but it's almost easy. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. Again, $200 off with the loss, the Milwaukee Weight Loss Summer Special. 262-235-3980, or it's easier, go to the website, MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. My thanks to Don August. Dan August, I think that was some a character in a TV show, I'm not sure. Don August, and also Mike DeCourcy. I got a soccer guy. I won't admit it publicly, though, just on this show. DeCourcy is so good, and I have so much respect for him, that he gets the same honor. Oh, I should have mentioned, he has his own... Mike DeCourcy, Yingling Star Hotline. So both of them were on the Yingling Hotline. Should have mentioned that sooner. But in honor of DeCourcy, if you're really special, you're honored by making the show go a little long so that it is now ESPN National in progress.